First reading is from the book of Ephesians, chapter 2, verses 11 to 22. Ephesians 2, 11 to 22. Therefore, remember that formerly you who were Gentiles by birth and called uncircumcised by those who call themselves the circumcision, which is done in the body by human hands, remember that at that time you were separated from Christ, excluded from citizenship in Israel and foreigners to the covenant of the promise, without hope and without God in the world. But now, in Jesus Christ, you who were once far away have been brought near by the blood of Christ. For he himself is our peace, who has made the two groups one and has destroyed the barrier, the dividing wall of hostility, by setting aside in his flesh the law that is with its commands and regulations. His purpose was to create for himself one new humanity out of the two, thus making peace, and in one body to reconcile both of them to God through the cross, by which he put to death their hostility. He came and preached to you who were far away, he came and preached peace to you who were far away and peace to those who were near. For through him we both have access to the Father by one Spirit. Consequently, you are no longer foreigners and strangers, but fellow citizens with God's people and also members of his household, built on the foundation of the apostles and the prophets, with Jesus Christ himself as the chief cornerstone. In him, the whole building is joined together and rises to become a holy temple to the Lord. And in him, you too are being built together to become a dwelling in which God lives by his Spirit. This is the word of the Lord.
Second reading is Mark chapter 6, verses 30 to 44. That's Mark chapter 6, verses 30 to 44. The apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all they had done and taught. Then, because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, "Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest." So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. By this time it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him. "This is a remote place," they said, "and it's already very late. Send the people away so they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat." But he answered, "You give them something to eat." They said to him, "That would take 8 months of a man's wages. Are we to go and spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat?" "How many loaves do you have?" he asked. "Go and see." When they found out, they said, five and two fish. Then Jesus directed them to have all the people sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of hundreds and fifties. Taking the five loaves and the two fish, and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to his disciples to set before the people. He also divided the two fish amongst them all. They all ate and were satisfied. And the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken bread and fish. The number of men who had eaten was 5,000. Praise be to God.
got in the right tangle there. That's why I normally take off my mask before I come up. I didn't today. Thank you, Peter. Thank you, Richard. Whenever you're sitting down, getting ready to come up and preach, it's kind of like if you leave the house and you think you've left the gas on or something, you suddenly fear, are they going to read the reading that I have prepared? But Peter came through for me and it was there. So it's never happened yet, but you live in fear every time that the reading's not going to be the one that you expected. But it was today, so that's good. Rod, do you want to ping the slides up, if you don't mind? So, Joel spoke to us a couple of weeks ago, for anyone who was here, on an earlier part of Mark 6 than we had read for us today, which was about Jesus sending out his disciples in pairs. And our reading picks up on the back of that story a little bit. Because you notice at the start it says, the apostles gathered around Jesus and reported to him all that they had done and taught, verse 30. So that's picking up off on the back of the reading we had a couple of weeks ago, where Jesus sent out the apostles in pairs to go and teach. So they come back and report everything that they've done on their travels. It's busy, and they haven't had a chance to eat or presumably to rest, wind down after their trip. So Jesus takes them away in a boat. The old control on the phone for the slides doesn't seem to be working well, so could you ping it on to the next one, please? Thank you. Now, they're followed in their boat by some crowds who are eager to see Jesus, and they run around the body of water they're travelling across. They beat them to their destination, so they've tried to sneak away on the boat for a little bit of quiet time after their trip away, but the crowd follow them and beat them there. And can you click through all the pictures, Roz? So as is so often characteristic of Jesus, he treats this not as an unwelcome interruption, but with great love and tenderness. He has compassion on the people that have made an effort to follow him around the lake, and he teaches them. The disciples, they ask Jesus to send the people away. It's too late, they say. These people need to eat. Perhaps they're sympathising with them after their earlier unsuccessful attempt to rest and eat. Or perhaps they're desperate, maybe even a little bit selfish, for some of that quiet time on their own with Jesus that they've been longing for after a period of separation. Now Jesus says back to them, he says, you give them something to eat. Normally when I read this, I think that's quite a sort of sharp, pointed reply, and certainly is in the way I read it anyway. The disciples seem to have posed a reasonable question, send the people away, and Jesus says, no, you give them something to eat. Seems quite unreasonable, isn't it? And the disciples are shocked by this response. They say, it would take half a year's wages to feed all of these people. Now I wonder, when I was reading this, is their question a literal question? Or is it rhetorical? We know they have a common purse that they use to fund themselves. Do they have half a year's wages in their purse? Are they wondering, would Jesus really splurge everything we have on feeding these people? Or is it a rhetorical question? They not even have that money. I don't know. And of course, all of this is without considering whether the local branch of Greg's happens to have 5,000 loaves of bread in stock. Did the baker have a premonition that morning that 5,000 people would need feeding? So what does this tell us about the disciples and Jesus? If you can just click through the next points, Roz, as well, if you don't mind. Now, the disciples, as we're moving from the earlier part of Mark 6 that I mentioned at the beginning to now, you see, they've gone from casting out unclean spirits, teaching in power, and suddenly they're focused on material things and human limitations. Maybe they've become a little bit like the people that Jesus spoke about in the parable of the sowers, for who the thorns that are the cares of the world have got in the way of their growth and bearing fruit. I wonder, did Jesus say to them, you give them something to eat in that moment? Because actually, having returned from their travels, where they've been teaching and working in power. Could they have done that miracle themselves in that moment if they'd had the faith to do it? Did they shrink back from what they've been doing into old habits, old ways of thinking that got in the way of the next step of discipleship that was in front of them? Whereas Jesus, in their moment of inability, shows his ability. And there's two overarching themes in Mark that come out here again. Jesus as the rightful king. The rightful king is the provider for their people. Jesus is the provider, the king, and the creator who's able to multiply food, create things out of nothing to provide for his people. Jesus is the rightful king and the creator. And our other reading from Ephesians today touches a little bit on what Jesus does in relation to the nation of Israel. And that's subtly referenced here as well in the 12 baskets of leftovers, which represent the 12 tribes of Israel. And if we look through Mark's gospel, this pattern that I picked on today continues. The disciples so often try but fail. In the way that they were sent out by Jesus and succeeded in power, but then didn't have the faith to believe in the miracle here. And right after this reading comes the episode of the storm in the boat, where they're afraid and they think Jesus is a ghost. And then Peter gets hold of the fact that Jesus is the Messiah. But it's only a moment later that he's rebuked for his misunderstanding when Jesus says, "Get behind me, Satan." And then later still, the disciples were embarrassed to be caught arguing about who's the greatest. But Jesus continues to love and equip them. He includes his disciples in some powerful events like the Transfiguration, intimate moments like the institution of the Lord's Supper, and the intimate moment in the Garden of Gethsemane before he goes to the cross, before then he ultimately commissions them afresh to go out into the world and proclaim the good news of Jesus. Now, the slides don't seem to have been working very well at all today, but there was a picture on slide 4. I don't know if you can get that up for us, Roz, at all. I saw this picture on social media this week, and it perfectly captured the heart of Jesus for me. I've been a little bit obsessed with football, as some of us might have been for the last month, following the ups and downs, the highs and lows of England's progression through the tournament. But for those of you who don't know, that photo is picture of the England football manager Gareth Southgate and the young 19-year-old player Bukayo Saka, who unfortunately missed the last penalty in the shootout that caused England to lose the final. And the words that sit alongside it that someone put together, if you can't read them, says, "I wonder if there's an image more beautiful than the embrace of the one who trains you, equips you, releases you, and when you fail, still embraces you and reminds you that your value comes from who you are, not what you did." And that's what I took a little bit from today's reading as you piece it together into the whole story of Jesus and the disciples in Mark. That we see Jesus training, equipping, releasing, but still embracing failure and giving value to those who don't succeed. And now today's passage of the feeding of the 5,000 is quite well known. And often the use of the loaves and the fishes and the multiplying is taught to demonstrate that Jesus takes what little we have and uses it in a powerful way. And perhaps what I'm trying to say today and through this image is not too different to that traditional message, just in a slightly different way. Because Jesus does train us and equip us and release us with whatever we have to use that. But whether we succeed or fail, he still welcomes us back. And that's what we always find in Jesus, the one that loves us, the one that welcomes us, and the one that accepts us. And although today's reading doesn't explicitly reference it, we know from elsewhere in the Bible that we're called to follow in Jesus' footsteps. As we relate to other people, we're called to have that same nature of equipping, training, releasing, loving, and accepting. I saw a verse from the Bible in a different translation, another common, well-known verse, in a slightly different translation. the other day that I hadn't seen before, and it really struck me, and I think it links in a little bit to what I've been saying today. So I wanted to put that on the screen as I finish, and I did have a sort of reflective piece of music keyed up to be played, but I wonder actually, Darren, if you wouldn't mind coming back and playing a bit of contemplative music, because actually what you did earlier was better than what I had keyed up. So I've come to the end, really, of what I wanted to say today. I hope it's been helpful. And so I just want to leave you with these words, if you can read them. Hopefully the white text isn't too bad to read. It's quite a bright day. But even if you can't read it, if we just listen to Darren play and reflect. See, if you want to start up, Darren, I'm going to read it out because I'm going to take a punt that probably half of you in here can't read that. This is 1 Corinthians 13, verses 1 to 7 from the Message translation. And it says, "If I speak with human eloquence and angelic ecstasy, but don't have love, I'm nothing but the creaking of a rusty gate. If I speak God's word with power, revealing all his mysteries and making everything plain as day, and if I have faith that says to a mountain, jump, and it jumps, but I don't love, I'm nothing. If I give everything I own to the poor and even go to the stake to be burned as a martyr, but I don't have love, I've gotten nowhere. So no matter what I say, what I believe and what I do, I'm bankrupt without love." Thank you.